Tom Weber on NPR News. Now the latest on the allegations of sexual harassment against Minnesota lawmakers. So far, allegations have been made against two men, DFL Senator Dan Schoen and Republican Representative Tony Cornish. Both deny they've harassed anyone. Both have refuted calls to resign. Interviews with those making the allegations, though, suggest that these are not the only lawmakers at fault. We're going to get the latest now from Brianna Biersbach, who broke the first story night before last. It was the story about Senator Schoen. She's a reporter with MinnPost. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Good story. Thanks for being here. Patrick Koulikan has been writing about this for the Star Tribune and joins us on the phone. Patrick, thanks so much for your time as well.
Good to be here.
I know that people who listen to this show include a lot of people who've worked at the Capitol. Maybe you were a lawmaker or a staffer. What would you add to this story that you've seen here playing out here over the last few days? Give us a call, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and don't call or text if you're driving. Brianna, the DFL leader in the Senate, Tom Bach, in your story, so as it was published, was already calling for Dan Schoen's resignation. Governor Dayton, every DFLer running for governor, and several other lawmakers followed suit. Has anyone in Republican leadership or the party structure called for Tony Cornish to resign?
Not that I've seen yet. That broke late last night by the Star Tribune and NPR News, and I think the party chairwoman, Jennifer Carnahan, has been reached out to and hasn't said anything specific yet or is deferring to the House. I should say House Speaker Dowd has said that they're taking these seriously and has suspended Tony Cornish from his chairmanship. So that's kind of the high-profile response we've had. Patrick may have known of others, but that's the only Republican I know of at this point.
Any calls, Patrick, for resignation?
Not yet that I'm aware of.
This morning, the latest, Patrick, is that the three women who were in Brianna's story, Erin McQuaid and Jamie Becker Finn, who are both current representatives, and Lindsay Port, who was a candidate for the State House, they're calling for a task force. What do we know about that, Patrick?
Well, I think they're trying to to call attention now in this moment to the situation regarding sexual misconduct around the Capitol, and then also in campaigns where the regulatory environment is certainly different than your average workplace. And they're calling on a better reporting system, a better training, and also some kind of nonpartisan independent process for taking reports of sexual harassment and then investigating those allegations. And they want a task force and one that would be actually move quickly and have some recommendations before the next legislative session.
We call on you today to establish a task force on sexual harassment, reads the letter, Brianna. And it also includes this, which is a point you alluded to in your story. Quote, there is no clear process for reporting. The current nonpartisan entity used for reporting has no real authority to take action. There is little transparency about the process and an abysmal record of accountability. And they're talking specifically about a process for reporting harassment by elected lawmakers. That's right. That's a distinction we have to make.
Absolutely. I think if you read the House policy, it's a no tolerance policy. They clearly define what it is, and they say we won't tolerate this. And there's a clear list of remedies if it's for an employee of the House, not an elected official. You can be terminated. You can be suspended. You can be verbally.
And people have been.
Absolutely. But when it comes to elected lawmaker, the direction that's given is that's up to the leadership of the House and the Senate, and basically directed to the House rules or the Senate rules, neither of which mention sexual harassment anywhere. They do have general decorum of the House and Senate, but those things don't talk about what to do in this situation. You can potentially suspend someone if with a two-thirds vote in either chamber, or you could hold an ethics committee hearing, but that process hasn't always worked well in the past. So I think for people, they don't think that the way it works now is actually dealing with the complaints.
But again, specifically against lawmakers,
yes.
Because if it's a staffer, if it's the legislative aide committing harassment, there is an avenue, and that person can absolutely be fired.
Absolutely. They can be fired. They're an at-will employee of the legislature. But if you are an elected official, you have an election certificate. And that was something that was brought up to me in some of the first interviews with women. You know, what do you do? Is it ultimately the voter's choice, or is there something that can be done at the legislature? So I think that's kind of the hope that this task force will address that.
I mean, that is that philosophical question, Patrick, of this person is here at the will of the voters. Who is the HR person to say you're fired, right?
Exactly. They don't really have a boss, and the legislative leadership is not really their boss, and it's the voters who are their boss ultimately. But should that exempt them from the proper rules of a workplace, and should that subject everyone that they work with to this kind of Wild West atmosphere? And I think most people would say we ought to have safe workplaces. So it certainly is it's a kind of a knotty issue, a difficult issue.
Yeah, it's interesting that in a place where they write laws that have loopholes, mm-hmm. they themselves are a loophole. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. We talk with Patrick Coulican, from the Star Tribune, Brianna Biersbach from MinnPost. We're taking your calls as well. Maybe you've worked at the Capitol. Maybe you have some insight here and can add something to the stories we're hearing about already. Potentially more coming as well. We'll see for sure. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Beth is on the phone here in Minneapolis. Beth, what would you like to add here today?
Well, I worked at the legislature when I was in college from 1987 to 1992, and I can tell you that culture strongly existed then, and the difference between now and then is there's more women in the legislature, but I've got to believe it's still pervasive. I had to leave the legislative arena because if you weren't a sexual object, you basically couldn't advance any kind of public policy there. I can tell you that what I read in the paper today, those women that came forward, those are career killers still today. If you come forward, you're betraying a certain allegiance, and people will hold that against you.
So wait, Beth, are you saying what? You didn't meet some definition of being sexy enough that your own career was limited?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you're dealing with a political arena where ego is very important to develop to even run for office. So you're dealing with a lot of different kind of personalities. In the 80s, it was almost an entire male legislature, so you were dealing with that. But if you wanted to get ahead, sexuality was a really big, important part of that. And if you weren't willing to play that game, there was no role for you there. And that included on the lobbying front, too. Unless you were working for a nonprofit or a poverty agency, that was the exception. But any of the sort of the power games, you had to be playing that game.
Beth, I'm sorry that happened, but thank you for calling and sharing that story as well. Brianna, here's another comment we had on our NewsCut blog from someone who writes, I worked at the legislature from 01 to 08. In 2006, we had a sexual harassment seminar, but the elected officials were specifically told they did not need to attend. The staff all laughed, men and women, because we all knew that we were not the reason for the seminar.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I think when you're a freshman legislator, you do go through a sexual harassment training right away. And they are going to now, I think this conversation started before these allegations broke loose, but I think they are going to require new harassment training at the start of the session. But the question is, does that actually do anything? If they've been doing training over the years, especially right when you come in, does it need to happen more often? You know, what kind of training are we talking about? What is actually said in those trainings? And I remember someone told me they sat in that training and said, well, if we report it, what actually happens? And there wasn't a good answer for it. So it was kind of about trying to identify sexual harassment and tell you how to report it. But when it is reported, there still was this problem that there's only so much you can do when you're talking about an elected official.
And Patrick, both men who've been accused right now so far, Senator Schoen and Representative Cornish, they have denied what? That these happened at all? What is the level of denial here we're hearing from these lawmakers?
Well, Brianna can probably better answer on the Schoen case. He seems to refer to these as miscommunications of some sort, but then he goes on to apologize anyway. In the case of Representative Cornish, he says that these interactions that have been described in his office where these are, he calls it, are just lies. And he's denying that. He says that this any inappropriate texts he may have sent to Representative Aaron May Quaid was taken out of context. And if you look at the whole string of texts, they have a cordial and collegial relationship. But he did, according to AP this morning, he was asked, I think, if he'd ever propositioned a female lobbyist to have sex, and he said, "Have I ever had an adult conversation with a woman about a relationship? Sure." But then he said he would need to know more details about what was being asked. But that's something of an acknowledgement there. And of course, there's a power relationship between a lawmaker and a lobbyist.
Right. And that's the interesting thing, Brianna. So the part of the story with the lobbyist who's unnamed in these stories says that she was alone in the office with him in a meeting. He said, "You can't leave." He says, "I have an erection." And then I believe he tried to kiss her. And he is saying that that entire story is completely false. My question, if this lobbyist is in the room asking him to support a bill that mm-hmm. she wants him to, and her whole professional existence is related to getting on the good side of lawmakers to pass their bills, why would she make up a story?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is part of the reason why women don't want to be named. There is still this fear of retribution, and it doesn't make sense to make up a story about that and not be named. And I think we will hear allegations of retribution of some kind as more things come out, but you know, what's really interesting is there is this culture where women don't feel like they have any recourse. And if they do say anything, even if they report it or even if they just say, "Hey, cut it out," they're told they don't know how to take a joke or they take things too seriously. And in a place where your success is based on the relationships you make, mm-hmm. People really fear ruining those by saying something that, you know, I think I also heard women second guessing themselves, like maybe it wasn't that big of a deal, or, you know, I'm older than this person. Why would they be hitting on me? That doesn't make any sense. And I think some women felt like because they didn't say something at that moment that they were somehow complicit in the behavior. There's really so much that goes in mentally into these encounters for women and what to do about them, especially in a place like the Capitol.
It's so interesting, Patrick, and the level to which we should potentially explain this to people who don't work in the Capitol is that if you're a lobbyist, you're literally being hired because you claim, and then you have to deliver, that you get your phone calls returned, that you're on friendly terms with the right lawmakers who can pass your bill.
Right. Lobbyists, I think in the public imagination, have about as much sympathy as used car dealers and newspaper reporters. But I actually feel the worst for them in these situations because they have just no recourse. There's nowhere to go if they were to be harassed or assaulted because their whole livelihood depends on these relationships and trust. And if there's a feeling around the Capitol that they are not trustworthy, then yeah, they're essentially worthless to their employer, to their clients.
Patrick Kulikin is with me from the Star Tribune. Brianna Biersbach from MinnPost. Brianna's first story the night before last detailed allegations against Senator Dan Schoen, who has not replied, I guess, to, I think it was knocking at his door. I think I saw that in one of the stories. People went to his house. Representative Tony Cornish also denying this, and both say they will not resign at this point. Aaron May Quaid did tweet this morning. She was asked on Twitter, or I should say a comment was made on Twitter. I can only imagine the nasty grams that Aaron May Quaid, who is the representative who's in both of these stories, has gotten in the last 4 hours. Representative May Quaid says, "I have gotten a few, but I've also gotten so many Me Too messages from other women about the harassers I named. It was worth it." Let's take a call here from James, who's in Apple Valley. Hi, James. What would you like to add here today?
Hi. I really have mixed emotions about this whole discussion, and it's an important discussion. I certainly don't condone sexual harassment in any way at any time, but, you know, I used to be a divorce lawyer, and, you know, the very first thing that people do in that venue is accuse one another of sexual misconduct as an effort to try to gain some sort of an advantage, I suppose, in the proceeding. And, you know, I I see some of this as sort of maybe a little bit of a Salem witch trial, where the mere accusation is enough to destroy people's lives on very little, if any, proof quite often. And I'm really of a very mixed emotion about it, because people are being truly destroyed. And certainly, if it's true, the women who have been harassed, and men get harassed too, also have their lives destroyed. It's a very tough deal, but there's no consequence for a false accusation that can destroy people's lives. And I'm wondering what your might think about that.
James, thanks for the call. Brianna, I'm sure you thought about that and knew that that would come up. What contemplation did you give to that as you were putting this story together?
You know, I took that very seriously, and I thoroughly checked the claims. I followed up with people they said they'd reported this to in 2015, 2 years mm-hmm. ago. Those people confirmed it. They confirmed conversations that went up the ladder. I did see text messages. I did see things with my own eyes that were sent to legislators. So I think I think there is absolutely, in journalism, we don't just hear a claim and then publish it. And right. then I thought it was very important to talk to the senator before I did anything. Right. I wanted to sit down with him, and we did that, and he knew of what I was talking about. He didn't make any comments about it at the moment, and I got a statement later. But
he knew the incident, or he knew the, I guess it was a party or something, where Lindsay Port was grabbed in the story, right?
Before I left the meeting, he was made it clear that he knew of each incident that I had brought up to him, that he knew what I was speaking of. Mm. He didn't give me details about what he knew of it. I got a statement later that said, of course, they've been taken out of context, or some are completely false. So that is what my experience was.
And the other thing, I think, this with Lindsay Port, it was last year or the year before, I don't remember when that
is. 2015 in August, there was a DNC event in downtown Minneapolis.
So one of the things you did in your reporting was that apparently Lindsay Port at the time told some of her friends.
Yeah, she actually went to Deputy Minority Leader Aaron Murphy.
And went to Aaron Murphy.
Who was her mentor. She helped recruit her to run for office. And she said, I don't know what to do. I'm not in the legislature, but you are. If I get elected, I have to serve with this individual. I want to tell you, and so you can tell someone else. I don't know what I can do because I'm not actually in the legislature. This is another mm-hmm. problem Patrick kind of mentioned before, which is that it happens in campaigns too. She didn't know what she could do, so she told Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy reported it up. Paul Thiessen eventually had a conversation with Senator Schoen. He didn't know of other incidents with women at that time. Mm-hmm. And so that was how that process played out. And we did know that before we wrote the story.
There is some back and forth happening right now, Patrick, among the leadership of both parties, because this is affecting right now, so far, lawmakers from both parties. And the question is, are the leaders of those parties, you have Speaker Kurt Dowd, you have Paul Thiessen, the minority leader, Aaron Murphy's also in leadership on the DFL side. Oh, by the way, they all either are or might run for governor, so there's that component. But there's this question on party leadership from both parties and whether they did the right thing and are in any way at fault here. What do we know about that right now, Patrick?
Well, there's a dispute regarding some incidents that happened last legislative session, so earlier this year. And Minority Leader Hortman says that she brought these issues to the Speaker, and we're pretty sure that happened because she also wrote a contemporaneous memo, which she released yesterday. Doubt disputes the idea that he was given any specific allegations. He had said earlier that he knew of no specific allegations. Hortman says that's not true. So it's an important dispute because it just goes to whether or not House leadership is dealing with problems once they're presented to them.
Would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, it also shows just how when you have a loosely defined policy, you know, you can report it to any house supervisor. That has to be reported to HR, but then there's no language about follow through or follow up. You know, that just leaves, I think, sometimes complaints languishing, or when you have two political people of opposite political parties who may be inclined to not like each other already, they're probably not checking in with each other, maybe even though they should. So you're seeing either a breakdown of miscommunications or a he said, she said here that ultimately boils down to a policy that is potentially too vague.
I mean, one of the examples this reminded me of, which doesn't have to do with harassment, but last year, Nolan West, who was a staff member for the State House, they found that there had been postings that he had made on Facebook about he's critical of Abe Lincoln. It's lynching time was one of his posts. And he was actually fired from the House staff. And so he was found to be not qualified and have broken the rules, meaning he can't work for the House. But the voters then a few weeks later decided that he could be and was qualified to be a member of the House.
That's true. That's a really interesting example of the difference. If he made those posts as a legislator, I don't really think the same thing would happen. You know, it would, again, have to be up to the voters in the fall if that's something they're okay with.
Has anyone, and I know we're just following the nuts and bolts of this story now, but has anyone looked into whether any other states, this has to be happening in 50 states where this recourse, you know, if you're a staffer, you're fired. If you're a lawmaker, we don't know. Does any state do it right? Does any state do it differently?
That's a really good question. As far as I've read, you know, mostly the states we're hearing about are the states that are having similar problems and similar issues with reporting. I know a lot of places are looking into changing their policies now. A whole other problem is whether these things even get reported in the first place because of the culture or the fear that nothing's going to happen if you do. So I think there's a lot more work to be done on policies and the culture in capitals about the way women feel they can come, if they can come forward, and what will happen if they do.
Brianna Biersbach is with me from MinnPost, Patrick Kulikin from Star Tribune, and let's take a call here from David on line 5. Hi, David. What would you add to this?
Well, the president is the moral leader of the nation, presumably. And he's given men permission to do what they do, which, you know, ain't good. But how many men are now looking up to the president and saying, hey, this is okay?
Thanks for the comment there, David. Patrick, has that thought process come up as you've reported your stories? It definitely is an interesting point to add there.
Well, there are certainly allegations about the president, but I've tried to focus on the situation at hand.
I have a tweet here to the last caller. This conversation about women being sexually harassed does not imply that men aren't. It means to address the systemic issue of women being harassed. And this wasn't for David. This is for the call beforehand. It means to address the systemic issue of women being harassed at higher rates than men throughout our society, where men have more power than women. Brianna, are we done here with this story?
I don't think so. I mean, there are definitely more allegations out there. The question is if people want their names to be attached to it. There's a lot of fear about reporting, and understandably so. I think this is going to be an issue in the next legislative session. There's potentially, Senator Schoen is not resigning. He's hired a lawyer to deal with any kind of ethics investigation, which could be incredibly messy if you're thinking about a public hearing where you're possibly asking people who say they were victimized to testify. I mean, it could be potentially a really messy process. Another thing that's been raised is an expulsion vote in the Senate. So this is going to come into the legislative session, I think, no matter what. And I think there is going to be a more robust discussion about what this Senate and the House's sexual harassment policies are.
So there is an avenue by which you don't have to wait till the next election to kick someone out. The members can expel a member.
Yes, by a 2/3 vote, which is usually pretty high, but just given some of the comments and sort of specifically on the case of Senator Schoen, I've really heard bipartisan calls for his resignation. It might not be as challenging, but time will tell. You know, things can change as session and months progress.
Patrick, is this story done from your perspective?
I suspect not. I know I'm certainly working on it today.
What happens if, to Brianna's point, that there are, you know, allegations you've heard of, and just for argument's sake, they are correct, but that you can't get anyone to go on the record or that you can't get anyone to confirm it. I mean, is there a danger here that allegations that might be stewing out there and in the rumor mill, and again, just for argument's sake, that are true, could be unreported, and then that person just gets away with it? Patrick, your thoughts?
Well, that's always a possibility, but we don't really have any choice but to abide by certain journalistic ethical standards, and we just have to use those guidelines to maintain our credibility with our readers.
I also think it's up to the people who have the stories to decide how they want them to be told, right? You can't force someone to put their name to something they feel uncomfortable talking about. And, you know, I think that is changing. More women do want to put their names out there, as we're talking about Harvey Weinstein and Me Too. But that doesn't mean everybody is comfortable with that. And there are plenty of examples and reasons why that is the case.
You work at the same Capitol, Brianna.
Yeah, I certainly know what they're going through. I mean, I'm a person in the media, so I don't think it's been as people haven't been as forward with me, but it's in everything you do. You know, someone touches you while you're talking to them or calls you sweetie or, you know, doesn't seem to take you seriously or sends you strange messages that don't actually say anything but are late at night. And you're kind of wondering what's going on here. And you just ignore it because you think, how will this affect my relationship? How will this affect how I do my job? And I definitely know what they're going through.
Well, good job on the reporting.
Thank you.
And good luck. Brianna Biersbach from MinnPost. Patrick, thanks so much for your time as well. Good story in the Strib. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
And NPR News is covering this as well. Brian Bax had a story this morning. He spoke with Kathy Werzer. You can find that story at nprnews.org.